Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. I'm your host, Gabby Quinlan, and I'm so excited to introduce Michelle Lentz today. Michelle has been married for 38 years, raised 6 children, and has a goal of helping women love their husbands and enjoy their marriages. Michelle is the author of her recently published book, Hey Beginner Wife, Practical Tips and Heartfelt Advice to Help You Have a Happy Marriage. Thank you so much for being with me today, Michelle.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So excited to dive into everything. But first, I wanted to just hear a little bit about you. How did you get into this whole world of marriage advice, especially for young women?
Yeah, well, I couldn't get enough marriage advice beginning in high school. I just have always had a bent toward wanting to be a wife and a mom. And my mom used to listen to Focus on the Family. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, but I grew up with that on every day.
Nice.
And I enjoyed it. I really did. So even in college, if I was running an errand and I had access to a car and it was the right time of day, I'd listen to it. But I did get married. Steve and I met each other right after college. We were 24 when we got married. And I just continued to learn. I continued to ask questions of people who'd been married longer than I had and continued to read recommended books. It's just always been a huge interest for me. So my kids, though, we have 3 boys and 3 girls. And, you know, they've had their friends in and out of the house. Well, once they've moved out of the house, and a lot of them, we're in the Chicagoland area. The oldest 3 landed in L.A. for a while, and they all were going to the same church. And their friends were so intrigued by the fact that their parents had been married. My kids' parents were still married, and they wanted my kids to talk to them about it. And my kids got back to me and said, Mom, so many people want to know how you and Dad kept a happy marriage. Their parents don't have one. They don't understand. They don't think they can have one. You should write something about it. And at the time, Instagram was a real natural thing to try. So I began 5 years ago, with my Instagram account, just writing advice that I thought would be helpful if you were dating or married, just things that I thought had made a difference in my life that I would want to tell the friends of my children. So my kids are now in their late 20s, mid 30s, and they were my target audience, as all of their friends. And then I had quite a few people reach out to me on Instagram and say, gosh, you should write a book. And to be honest, I've always wanted to write a book, but I've never known what I would write about. So I sat down 2 years ago. I was really praying about what to do. And the direction that I got was write a book that you'd want to give to one of your son's wives with practical advice for being married. And so that helped me get my target audience. But also my target audience is young women who have not seen a happy marriage and don't think that they can have one. And I'm writing to let them know that marriage is a good thing and they can aspire to it and they can actually achieve it. So my book is really a behind-the-scenes look at an everyday marriage, and I try to be really vulnerable and give those stories so they can see, oh, okay, she's not perfect. You know, she's just figured this out. She's made mistakes just like me. You know, the things that are going on in her head are the same things that go on in my head. So that's how I got started. The book actually just came out last month. It took me 2 years to write it. And
so
I reached the finish line. I'm so excited about that.
Congratulations. That is
Thank
huge.
You.
Oh my gosh. And I feel like it's so flattering too, to have your kids tell you, Mom, you need to put this all down somewhere.
Yeah.
And to have, you know, so much encouragement to do that. And then to do it is just such an accomplishment. Congratulations. That is
Thank
amazing.
You.
That's awesome. So that's kind of your inspiration for the book. All of that in mind, I'm sure.
Yes.
And your audience was very clear. One thing I noticed, I was reading through some of the reviews of your book, And something I kept seeing over and over was, you know, when you read this book or when you look at Michelle's advice, you know, on Instagram, you feel like you're talking to a friend. You feel like someone's really opening up to you. And it just feels comfortable. There's no judgment, but it's, you know, advice from a woman who's been there and been through, several different challenges and difficulties, and is just there for you. And so I think that that is so wonderful that, you know, you now have this resource for people and this resource that, that women and men and, you know, people can share with other couples who are just embarking on these journeys, or single women who are still looking for their person. I just think that's amazing. That's great.
Yes, single women are definitely included.
Absolutely. And I read one review was like, I'm single and this is going to help me in my friendships, not only in dating and things like that.
Right.
But a lot of your advice is about communication, outlook, just your attitude toward other people, from what I've gathered. So I think that, like she said, it applies to more than just your romantic relationships, but obviously helps the most in that area.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your own kind of journey. I know you talked about, you know, your six children. What were kind of your early years of marriage like? How have they shaped your insights as you've channeled all your wisdom into this outlet?
Well, we got pregnant with our first child just, I think, 5 or 6 months into our marriage. So our early marriage was a lot of being pregnant, feeling sick, feeling tired, having a newborn, getting pregnant again. So we had to deal with that, you know, being newlyweds and yet also being pregnant. And I didn't realize what was happening in that season was that I was shifting my focus onto my children because, you know, I'd never been a mom before. And I felt like our relationship was solid. We were good. And that my husband was kind of taking the back seat in what was going on. It wasn't a conscious decision, but it happened. And I was focusing on the kids and giving them what they needed, prioritizing them to the point that if I was tired from watching children, then I would just tell Steve, honey, I'm so tired. I'm sorry, but, you know, I can't stay up and talk. I don't want to go to that event. I'm just tired. So that became all-consuming. Well, the net effect of that also was, as they got older, and I'm telling my children, training them, because I stayed home with them, so I'm in training mode all day long, you know, do this, don't do that. I started treating Steve that way. It just is natural. You know, you're telling everyone, you're managing the household, and it's kind of like, hey, that's on you. You should have done that. Honey, when are you going to get that done? Well, I didn't actually realize that was happening until I've been married like 14 years. So when you say early, it kind of, I mean, I guess I can call the first 14, 15 years early since I've been in it 38 years. But it was through a conversation I heard. It was an interview that I heard between two men talking about marriage and respect in marriage. They talked about the fact that women don't understand how significant respect is to their husband. And they, what I realized as I dove a lot deeper was we define it differently. But I also realized that by not treating my husband like a grown man, but by defaulting into correcting him and reminding him, that I was treating him like a little boy. And so he was pulling back a little bit. He didn't know how to articulate this. I'm sure he felt the difference. And we were still good. We were still happy. But I know he was missing the woman he married, who had become a mother. And he was probably how long do I have to wait this out before I get my wife back? But discovering that whole truth about what respect is and how to respect your husband transformed me. And probably I would say that's what kicked me out of beginner wife mode, because I learned a whole new skill. And in fact, that's one of my favorite chapters in my book. And it was the hardest to write. I think I wrote that chapter, I rewrote it 4 or 5 times. Because every time I'd write it, I would read it and think, oh, you know, newlywed Michelle wouldn't understand this. And so I'd write it again to try to get newlywed Michelle to hear what I had come to understand. It's just a whole new concept. So if nothing else, I would recommend people dive into that chapter because it really transforms. We just don't know how it happens that we begin criticizing and critiquing our husband rather than just being like their adult peer friend, their wife, you know? So absolutely. I point to that as the biggest before and after for me as a young wife and then, a little older.
Yeah, that's such great advice. I know I've heard this before that women crave love and affection more and men crave respect, like you had mentioned, more, almost to the point that men would rather be respected than loved if they had to come to that. And so I think that's such an important thing to talk about. And I'm, as you're saying all of this, I'm like, oh, I do this too. You know, my husband and I have been married for only 2 years, but we have a toddler. She's always getting into stuff. She's the best, of course. We love her. But she's in that stage of very curious, and I'm constantly correcting. It's so easy to slip into that when, you know, your husband comes home or whatever. So I think, that's such great advice to start implementing now as I'm in those earlier years and as other women are in those earlier years.
Just being aware of it.
That's great. Totally. And this is kind of a communication thing too, but you mentioned your husband not necessarily being able to articulate that need. And I was thinking about how important it is to kind of build your family on certain core values. And just wondering, what would you say is your advice for communicating those core values early in a relationship, even when you might struggle to kind of pinpoint those things that are important to you? What would you say to couples trying to focus their relationship on certain core values?
Yeah. Well, when we were engaged, the priority core value for us was that we shared the same faith. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of easy in the beginning because, you know, you're talking about what's that going to look like? What church are we going to go to? Why are we both comfortable or not comfortable with that church? So that to me was very basic, bare bones core value. The rest, I think the best thing was having a book that we went through together. When we were engaged, we read several books together. And then that was like a third party that we could talk about. We'd say, well, what did you, we'd underline things and then go back and say, okay, in this chapter, what did you think about that? And one of the books we actually went through with another couple. So that provided the structure for us. If you get a real quality book that's been recommended to you about marriage, and then later on, since we had children so early, one of the things we had to establish is what parenting was going to look like in our house. And we ended up finding a class that was taught in person on parenting. And what came out of that was we both realized it was memories of how we were parented. And so then we shared those and talked about what that looked like, which doesn't come up when you're dating. I mean, you don't talk about what happened on your birthday and what gifts that you got and how that made you feel. I mean, it's just not significant when you're dating. But when you have a three-year-old and you're talking about what you think you should gift that child, now you start talking about that and what does that look like and what classes are we going to put them in. And so for us, it was very helpful to have a third party, which was a book. It could obviously be another couple that you're talking to or someone else, but some kind of structure so there's someone else leading and guiding the conversation so you're actually making some progress, maybe not rehashing the same emotional topic over and over again, which doesn't really, usually doesn't build your foundation. It's a different kind of thing that's going on.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's very helpful. It can be hard in the heat of, you know, an argument or, like you said, in a recurring kind of issue between you to come to a common ground, but talking about something outside of your marriage that you can discuss more objectively, I think is great advice. I wanted to ask you also, this is a theme that you mention in your book, you know, a lot of men and women make the decision to get married and make it to the altar, but they don't necessarily understand the fullness of what they're entering into. And I don't think anyone ever could, right?
Right.
It's kind of like parenting. You don't really know until that baby's in your arms and you're dealing with all these things you've never had to juggle before. What do you think is a common misconception of marriage that you've seen in your work advising, you know, young couples and young women?
You know, I think we believe that we're actually going to arrive one day and that we won't need to work or learn. Mm. And that's not true. We always need to be learning. We always need to be listening. We always need to be going back to our spouse and saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong. I didn't do that correctly. And we're at a new place. We're becoming new people. We're given new challenges. So we have to keep learning. So there's really not a place in our marriage where we're on autopilot. It gets to where it's a whole lot easier. And it's almost like autopilot. I mean, honestly, I do feel that way sometimes with Steve. But then something will happen and I think, I can't believe I just said that. Gosh, you know, how come I'm not perfect already, you know? We never arrive.
Yeah. It's two imperfect people trying to make something perfect. And yeah, definitely. That's so true. And yeah, in that same vein, I think people think that their relationship issues that they have before they get married will just be easier and be solved. But I've, at least in my experience and with other young couples that I know, that's almost the opposite of what happens. I think marriage can kind of amplify issues that were there before. And so it is really important to have those conversations that need to be had before you enter into this very important covenant with another person.
Well, and I know you didn't ask me this, but I just thought of it when you said it. And I think it's really simple, but really powerful is when you're in those situations with your new husband and you just feel like you're rehashing things or you're not perfect and you're really frustrated. It's so easy when let me just cut to it. We accuse one another in arguments and we say, you always do this. When we were engaged, you did this and you know, you haven't changed. Or you never do this. I ask you to do this and it never happens and it never gets done. And when we're learning each other, especially when we're newly married, we are really quick to pull out the word always and pull out the word never. And that is one of my favorite pieces of advice is when you hear yourself saying that, you've got to stop and dial it back and say, I'm so sorry. Because anyone who's accused like that, it's hard to kind of come back and go, no. You know, and then do you really, you want to prove them wrong, but you're so mad at them for the accusation that you're kind of like, why quit? If you think I always do that, and I can tell you three things I did yesterday that were not that, and you didn't notice, well, forget it. I quit, and you walk out of the room, and it just, oh my gosh, so many arguments, so much bitterness comes from those accusations. So I know that's not what you asked me, but I was like, oh, I just really want to say that right now.
No,
just
make
a mental note, pick those words out.
What are those words called? Like always statements.
Right.
Gosh, I'm forgetting. But yes, that's so true. And I think what you said too, being willing to say, I'm sorry when you feel yourself going on that offensive and attack mode.
Because
it automatically puts the other person on the defense and makes it a fight instead of a discussion. I totally agree. And something we're all working on, right?
Yes, all of us.
Yeah, that's
for
that's
sure.
Great. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And I guess for someone struggling with that, with, you know, in the heat of the moment, getting really aggressive, what would you say is like a practical way of dispelling those intense emotions and recentering so that you can approach your spouse in a more constructive and healthy way?
Because it's the heat of the moment and it's kind of hard to dial that back when it's you, I think it would be great if a couple agreed that they would help one another out. So say I'm losing it and my husband was able to say, honey, you've kind of lost it. You're feeling this so deeply. Mm-hmm. Let's table this conversation. Can you take maybe the next whatever time you want to sit and journal this? Why don't you go for a walk? Why don't you go take a shower and we'll revisit this? We can revisit it in a half an hour. We can revisit it tomorrow. I'll watch the kids if you want to do this now. But if my husband could lovingly stop me and say, okay, I think you're saying things you don't mean right now. And I think we need to just put this on pause. And he took that lead. And we had agreed that that was okay. So it wouldn't feel like condescending or anything. If we agreed to that in the beginning, I think that would be really, really helpful. I do think stepping aside from that kind of thing and journaling is very helpful. Or if you have something you're upset about that you want to confront your husband with, to first journal it all down, kind of sort it out, let it sit for a while, because overnight it's going to feel different. And then you'll be able to say, okay, I think I can articulate this now. Trying to get those emotions under control when we want to just embrace them in the moment, and, you know, it feels better in the moment to just be angry and mad and yell or whatever, but it's not helpful. And it is more work to repair once it happens. So that's what I would recommend.
I really like the journaling advice too, because sometimes, you know, seeing something on paper or just the act of kind of getting those feelings out, like you said, is helpful.
Well, and I will say, journaling on like paper that you can throw away. Don't go put it in your hardbound journal that maybe could be discovered if, you know, accidentally.
Yes.
Put it on a single sheet of paper and then burn it or shred it or throw it away at the grocery store, you know, somewhere else, because you're going to work through it. And no one needs to read that.
Yes.
You're not even going to want to read it in 6 months. I promise you. You'll just be like, oh, can't believe I wrote that.
It'll take you back to that. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely. Gosh, that's so true. I didn't even think of that. And yeah, you don't want to hold on to that. You want to work through it and then let go and move on. So that's really good advice. Oh my gosh. Definitely going to pocket that for myself. That's great. So another thing for kind of the newlywed stage that I wanted to ask you. So I think a lot of women enter marriage seeking perfection or thinking their husband is going to be just this perfect guy with, you know, always unloads the dishwasher, always picks up his side of the room, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously that's not the case, because we are all imperfect, men and women alike.
Right.
And so what are some ways you can kind of approach that expectation and rewire your brain to not be seeking perfection and be more generous and realistic in your expectations?
That's a really good question. I wrote, one of my chapters is on expectations and how they really set us up for failure. And yet we come to a marriage with expectations. I mean, I started the chapter by saying, these were the expectations for my husband. I wanted this, 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 and this. I mean, I had a list of my hopes for him.
Right.
And that was real obvious, because once I met him, I was able to say, oh, well, you're a good match. You're not a perfect match, but that means I have to let go of numbers 13, 14, and 15, you know, because it's okay. It's okay. I'll let go of that. Those are easy. It's the expectations that come to us because it was modeled. Our parents did that, so we assume that's what marriage looks like, or it's we've seen it in movies, or however it comes to us. We have certain expectations that we don't even think to talk about because they're just expectations. Like, we just think that's the way everything is.
Yeah.
So identifying them is a big deal. And usually what happens is we start to have a running dialogue in our mind of the things he's doing wrong. And we have accusations against our husband. And they're usually small. Like you said, they're usually things like, well, you should have unloaded the dishwasher, and you should have picked up after yourself, and you should have remembered to do that, and you should have gotten me a birthday card, not the day of, or the day after, you know, you should have all these things become an inner dialogue that works against us and it follows us wherever we go. So I want to encourage women to take the time to figure out what's going on in your mind and grab it and say, that's it. I am not going to run this accusation over again. Instead of focusing on the fact that he didn't unload the dishwasher again, I'm going to think to myself, what did he do? Okay, he got up this morning and turned the heater on and started the coffee for me. What a great guy I have. And then make yourself think about that all day long. It really takes work. Sounds like, oh, that's really silly. But it is really powerful when you take your accusations and replace them with different things that you're thankful for. And in the book, I just give a list. I say, okay, this might be hard. You might not be used to thinking about this. Here's a list of things that I remind myself about my husband when I get a little irritated, or things that I choose to highlight in the moment when I see them happening. So one of the things I love about my husband, Steve, is his laugh. Anytime he laughs, it just makes me happy. He has an infectious laugh and he's quick to laugh.
I love that.
So when I hear that, you know, when I hear him in the next room laughing at a TV show, I think, I love that that's the soundtrack of my home. I love that he laughs.
Aww.
And then I try to say, honey, you have the best laugh. I am just so happy that that's your laugh. He's tired of hearing it, but I want to remind myself that I could have a husband who never laughs, you know? And women that have those kind of things, like women that are married to a handyman who fixes everything, and then they complain about the fact that he hasn't gotten around to fixing the whatever. I hear those women and I think, wait, what? Your husband redid your kitchen. He fixed the front porch. Things that my husband doesn't know how to do. And they're complaining that we all do that though,
right,
about whatever it is. So my advice would be, identify the thoughts in your mind, take control and replace them with things you're thankful for, and it will turn things around.
I love that. Oh, I love that so much. That's so sweet. Sometimes it's those little silly things that you kind of forget that those are the things that you fell in love with in the beginning with your husband. You know, you probably remember dating and him cracking jokes and you just having the best time. And I think that's so beautiful. You can take that with you and focus on that instead of, all of the downfalls, because why would we torture ourselves like that? You know, we have
it
these,
is torture.
We have these, assuming
right.
You have a great husband, but I mean, we're all very blessed, in different ways, of course, but you know, that's really great to think about. I wanted to ask, because I know some of the people who will listen to this, have not maybe found that person or are dating someone. They're not sure where it's going necessarily. What would you say are things that women who are dating, men who are dating, what should you look for in a person in a potential future spouse that, you know, you want to bring into a marriage, but you haven't yet, so you have that flexibility, obviously.
Right. So I would first and foremost look for someone who shares my faith. I think that's critical.
Yep.
I think years ago, that was just a no-brainer, but we've gotten more progressive as a people and didn't think that it mattered. And here's the thing. Your faith, you know, we can tell our friends that. They don't have to have our faith, but they need to find someone who shares their faith, because they're bringing children into this relationship. And we make decisions based off of our faith. We actually treat one another based off of our faith. We approach apologizing and forgiving based off of our faith. Some faiths don't value that. Well, I need to marry a man who knows how to apologize and how to forgive. I mean, that's important to me, very important to me. So I would say the humility, you know, along with the shared faith, does he have the humility to apologize and to forgive? Which I say that my husband would be sitting here smiling at me, because I had more trouble apologizing when we got married than he did he was ahead of me in this area. So I am so thankful for that. I had to learn to do better. I would look for someone who's happy, because you're going to be living with this person. And it's not too much to ask that this is a happy person. It makes a difference if the person that you're marrying is discouraged all the time or depressed or downtrodden. So I would look for someone who can handle life. And that might just be maturity that comes later, but I would prioritize that. And then I would also look for someone who can do life on their own and isn't dependent upon you, and who will give you the freedom to live your life. If you're dating someone who, in the name of love, but it's not love, it's control, if they need to know where you are all the time, if they need to be tracking you on their phone, if you need to answer to them for how you spent your time, or they don't want you to spend time with any of your friends because they're threatened by that, that's a big red flag, and don't do it. So those are my quick go-tos for sure.
That's super helpful, I think. Yeah, a lot of people, I think a lot of people will benefit from that. It's easy to get wrapped up in someone, but autonomy and, you know, being happy on your own is very important for sure.
I don't mean to say you're going to get married and be two independent people, because when you get married, you become one, right? But you still need to have an independent, healthy sense of self-esteem. So it's a little nuance there.
For sure. And I think too, once you're married and especially I think becoming a mom, you really need that support from other women, from your community. It's really important to not only rely on your husband for your emotional support and needs. I think in my opinion, just you need other people who are walking through those things to walk by beside you as well. So that's a good, it's a healthy start if your, you know, boyfriend encourages you to have good relationships with other people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And then for those people who are like, okay, my husband or my boyfriend can apologize really well. He's humble. I think he's the one. But we still have to have some of these important conversations before we take the next step. What are some of those conversations you think they should be having? What's kind of something maybe you wish you had talked about with Steve before you guys got married? What are those critical things that are prerequisite to, you know, saying I do?
There's so many that I know that advice is to go to premarital counseling just to really flesh those out and make sure that you talk about them. Because I know as couples, we can have blind spots and think that, oh, we've talked it all through. We've got it all, you know. And then you might have someone else who says, well, okay, but what about this? You know, I can kind of see that you are a little bit, insecure in this area, or you're a little more mild-mannered. What does it feel like to you to have him take the lead? Things that, as a couple, you're not going to talk about. So I would seek out premarital counseling just for that purpose of it being a real practical tool that could help you. Obviously, you're going to talk about finances and what that looks like. I recommend that couples share their finances, that they become one. And then once that happens, what does that mean? You know, how do you decide how to spend that money? Are you going to budget it? Are you not going to budget it? As one of you spend more than the other, and what does that look like? Do you ask to spend? You know, those are good things to talk about, because they become emotional if you don't, and you get married and someone overspends, and now you've got a real problem because you never brought it up. What does it look like, your relationship with your parents, your family? What's the expectation? What expectation do you have of me in terms of your family traditions? Traditions. And then what do you want as a couple to become yours? Where do you want to live? What does that look like to you? Those kind of simple things. But to be more thorough, I would look for some kind of a third party type premarital counseling.
I agree. I totally agree. We did marriage prep with a couple who had been through a ton. They'd been married for, I think, 30 plus years, 7 kids. And we were like, we want to be like you guys. So we're going to get advice from you, you know?
Yes.
So I think that's so important to seek that out. And obviously looking to the family members and parents maybe who you admire, and not being afraid to approach them too with anything. I think that that's really great, great advice. So this is also a kind of a practical thing for the people who are dating who will be listening to this, but you talk about these great communication habits and building, you know, trust and having a positive outlook on your partner. How can you start building those habits before you get married when you're still dating and navigating that and figuring that out? What are some ways that people can shape their relationships so that they'll be successful in the future if they do get married?
Okay, yeah, good question. Something that's significant when you're married is that you believe in one another, that you give each other the benefit of the doubt. And so even when you're dating, to begin practice giving him the benefit of the doubt. And it's so, we are so quick to, like I said, to accuse one another or assume the worst about one another, that something to practice now, it's what does it look like to give them the benefit of the doubt? What does it look like to believe the best about them? And it is, once again, being mindful of your internal dialogue. And where did your mind go when you heard that? If you all decided that you were going to meet one another, you know, he wasn't going to pick you up. You were just going to meet one another at a restaurant at 7 p.m. And it's 7:20 and he's not there. And you have been spending 15 minutes of hashing, rehashing how, gosh, he's always late, isn't he? And oh my gosh, I bet he stopped to talk to his friend who can't shut up and he can never get out of that conversation because, oh my gosh, what a wimp he is. Why can't he handle this, these kind of things? I can handle these things better. I would never have gotten myself into a long conversation and disrespected my, you know, him by showing up late. I mean, we spend maybe the 15 minutes accusing him rather than believing the best and thinking, oh my gosh, I bet he feels terrible that he's late. I wonder what happened. And then when you don't bring judgment on the situation until you hear the whole story and give them the space to share their story before you build up a whole list of all the things they've done wrong. That can be done now. It can in practice. It takes practice. So because our thoughts have had a whole lifespan of just running rampant in our mind, you've got to grab them and say, no, I'm going to believe the best about him. Let me think what might have happened. I would start doing that now, and I would also start maybe volunteering together, maybe doing something outside of yourself so your whole relationship isn't so focused just on each other. It's very easy to do that, especially when you're just discovering one another, and then when you're engaged, and then when you're newlyweds. I mean, we just are so enjoying one another that we get so introspective. But as a couple, it's always a great idea to give away from yourself. And to volunteer together would be a great idea. Even if it was a one-time event, it doesn't need to be that you're signing up for, you know, to run summer camp for a summer or something. I mean, it could just be that you're doing setup for some picnic or something. But look for ways that you can serve. Because once you get married, I know everyone says this, but it's true. You'll discover that you're more selfish than you ever thought you were. And there's no way to work all that out before you get married. It just hides too well. But it's going to happen. So you're going to have to learn how to deal with it and to rise above it and start thinking about someone else.
Mm-hmm. So true. So true. And I think, I mean, I'm very early in, so I feel like I can't even talk about this, but love in a marriage is sacrifice, and you know, and I think it's just something you constantly work at, even, you know, years and years into marriage. But just learning to put the other person first essential, I think, and being willing to just lift them up instead of putting them down. Just so important. So your book and a lot of your advice is geared toward women. But I know we're going to have some male listeners to this episode. And I wanted to ask you, what's your advice for the male listeners out there who might be, you know, dating, engaged, or in their early years of marriage? What would you say to them, as they navigate this season?
Because I think the whole topic of respect is so misunderstood by women, and it is so taken for granted by men because it's how they're hardwired. I know that my husband did not realize that I didn't understand it. Because when I was learning it, I went to him and I said, "Honey, when I said that, did you feel disrespected?" And he looked at me like, "Yes. Like, did you really not know that?" Yes, it was very much a standard to him. So I feel like things that I did that offended him, he thought I was doing on purpose, but I was really doing it because I honestly didn't know what I said was disrespectful. You know, like, and the very basics of saying, "Honey, you know, are you going to get the car washed today?" That could come across as disrespectful because I'm not trusting that he can get it done without my reminder. Honestly, I think if a man read the chapter I wrote on respect, it would be very insightful to him to realize women don't get this. To think about their fiance or their wife and help and be more patient with them and say, "Honey, you may not realize this, but when you said that, this is what it feels like to me. When you remind me to get the car washed, I feel like you are accusing me of being irresponsible. And I don't think that's what you mean to do, but that's how it comes across." If we could rationally have a discussion about what that looks like, I think it would revolutionize a lot of marriages. And I think for men to realize, they may need to learn how to articulate it too, because it's just it's understood among their relationship with other men. So I would start there. I would have them, you know, men don't necessarily want to learn about relationships, but that topic directly affects them and they're experts in it. So they probably would really enjoy reading about something they're an expert about and then considering how they can help their wife understand it without accusing her. Because I really think women don't know the extent of it. We're just taught to stick up for ourselves and speak out, you know. We're taught a lot of that at the expense of not considering our husband's experience at the other end of what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such great advice. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people could have really important conversations if they consider that topic. And yeah, read the book, guys. I'm telling you. So I know you've kind of touched on this before, but if you had one more thing for us to take away from your book, from, you know, your years of experience, what's one more nugget of wisdom you could offer us before we wrap this up?
Oh, well, I think of marriage as a lifelong commitment. And I talk about that in my book, that there's two approaches to marriage. One is marriage is a contract that can be broken. And the other is that marriage is a covenant that is for life. And in the context of marriage being for life, we need to know what we're doing. It is a marathon that we're signing up for. Marathons are hard work, but we can do hard work, and that's okay. When things feel difficult or challenging, stick with it. It's a season. Marriage has seasons, and that's why, at least I think this is why, the traditional marriage vows talk about that. You know, I take you for better or for worse. I take you in sickness and in health. I take you for richer and for poorer. And my whole book is about the seasons of my life. We had richer seasons. We've had poorer seasons. We've had sickness. We've had health. And no one goes to the altar thinking, "I'm signing up for sickness. I'm here," whatever that might look like.
Right.
You don't anticipate it. You don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, I had a brain surgery when we had six children at home. I would never in a million years think that I would have brain surgery. That's so random.
Right.
And how that affected our marriage and how that affected our children. We had to go back to our vows and go, okay, in sickness and in health, for better, for worse. This is kind of for worse, but we're here, right? And what we're doing is investing in each other. We're investing in the next generation. We are contributing to God's kingdom in the way that we are faithfully every day pouring into the lives of our children and our family and our neighbors. And that takes a lot of faith that that's what we're doing, because the little pieces of good that we do aren't as trackable as the evil that happens or the bad that happens. It's super easy to look and go, they're terrible neighbors. You know, they've affected our whole neighborhood by being cranky. Well, you're affecting your whole neighborhood by being friendly and cheerful and contributing and volunteering and seeing people and saying hello. It's just not quite as noticeable because it lands in a different place. But marriage is like that. It's a long journey. It's an investment, and it's a good, good thing. So what you're doing, and by being married, by saying yes, it's admirable. It's noble. I can't think of anything that you could do with your life that would make a stronger difference in the world than just building a happy home and investing in the people around you.
Amen. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much. That is,
yes.
I could not agree more. That is so, it's inspiring to hear from someone who's doing it and living it. And yeah, I think just speaking for myself and other young couples out there, I mean, this is the goal, what you guys have and
yes,
what you're still working for every day and how you're still choosing to love each other every day throughout, you know, thick and thin. Yeah, it's exactly what we're looking for. So thank you for sharing that. That's great. So I want to ask you, you just published your book, so you might be taking a well-deserved break, but is there anything else on the horizon for you in the coming years? Anything you want to talk about? Any projects you're excited about that you want to share?
Well, I can't say that I have named a project yet. In the middle of writing this book, I realized that I needed to write a companion guide to go with it. So I actually just published two books. The companion
amazing.
Right? I know. I was like, how did this happen? And it was exhausting in a new way because the book was done and I thought each chapter needed a supplemental workbook chapter. And what I did in the book was write it in a way that it would be accessible to everyone. I'm a Christian. I did not write this book talking about the fact that I'm a Christian. I wrote this book talking about what practical things contribute to a happy marriage and how you can have the same thing. Now, there's a lot under the surface that gives me the strength to do that, gives me the foundation to have that opinion, to hang in there. And all of that I put in the companion guide. My faith I put into the companion guide, because there's going to be women like you who are like, wait a minute, like that's, tell me how you did that. That's harder than you're making it sound.
Right.
I put the scriptures in there. I put the question and answers in there. And I structured the companion guide in such a way that a group of women, or maybe even couples, but probably women, could decide, hey, let's do a book club and talk about this book. And ideally, honestly, Gabby, I would love to lead every one of those groups. I love having women in my home. I love leading studies. And I thought, okay, if I were to take my book and turn it into a study, what would it look like? And so that's what I wrote, is like, read this, answer that question, talk about that, read this. So I'm very happy about that. I don't know what it will look like. I don't know if I'll have an opportunity to teach anything in person, to do conferences or anything like that. I would love that. But I'm just going to take it as it comes right now and see where this book lands. And I wouldn't mind writing another book. I'm not going to start tomorrow. I don't know how women do that, honestly. Right. But there's a lot more to say, so it's possible.
Sure, sure. That's great. That's great. Well, All of that sounds amazing. And we will link your book and the companion in the show notes so everyone can check it out. Yeah, very excited. Where can people buy your book?
Thank you.
Just so the listeners know.
Yes. So my book is called Hey Beginner Wife. My Instagram account is also called Hey Beginner Wife. So if you can remember that, you're good.
Yes.
And my website is heybeginnerwife.com. So I would start
by
going to my...
You make it easy for us.
Thank you. I was trying. If you go to heybeginnerwife.com, I talk about my book. I talk about what each chapter is and what each chapter covers. And I also have frequently asked questions about who is this book for? Would it make sense to give to this person? And women or whoever, it's possible to download the first chapter of the book directly from my website to see, you get a flavor of what the book is like. It's all written just like the first chapter is written with stories about my life, practical, behind the scenes, vulnerable. I mean, I just wanted it to be like what your best friend might not even tell you is going on behind closed doors. I wanted to share. I wanted to give people something really, really practical. So if you are confident that you want the book, just go to Amazon and buy it directly from them. If you go to my website, there's links on the website that take you directly to Amazon. It's only being sold right now on Amazon. If any other bookstore wants to pick it up, that would be amazing. But right now it's directly from Amazon. It's on Kindle and paperback. But I set up the website to give an intro to it to people, even people that may not hear our conversation. You could just say, go check out her book at this website. And then they'll be introduced to it. And hopefully all their questions would be answered there.
That's great. Thank you so much. That is such a good resource. And I can't wait for our listeners to hear this, read about, you know, your life and your wisdom and all of it. So
thank you
so much. If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Ferris Love website for more resources on building relationships and families of faith.